After an amazingly historical winter storm over the weekend where 15.8 inches officially fell at the airport, the snowiest April ever, the biggest snowstorm in April's history.
That's meteorologist Belinda Jensen at CARE 11 tallying up the totals from this week's big snow. Now new science suggests there's a connection between heavier snows and climate change. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. This is ClimateCast. Picture this scenario. A snowstorm moves in. The temperature is just cold enough for all snow. Now, what happens to that same storm if you add extra moisture and slow the storm down? You guessed it, even more snow. Dominic Winsky with Dartmouth College studied snowfall patterns on a remote Alaskan mountain, and he found a link between a wetter climate and heavier snow.
It surprised us at first, but when we thought about it harder, it actually makes a lot of sense. So where we are on Mount Hunter, where the study took place, is actually so cold that it never even approaches freezing for the most part, even during the summer. So more snowfall actually just means more precipitation. And this is somewhat expected, and this being seen across the Arctic, where because more warm air holds more moisture, you get higher precipitation values. But what we're seeing on Mount Hunter even exceeds that. This dramatic doubling of snowfall we see is linked partly to just the warmer temperatures, but mostly it's due to a deepening Aleutian low, which is connected with warmer temperatures in the tropical Pacific.
You know, I'm interested in the trend lines because we've just endured our biggest April snow on record here in Minnesota. It's also the 12th largest snow event of all time for the Twin Cities. So I went and I looked at the dates for the list of the top 20 snowfall events in the Twin Cities. 8 of the top 10, 15 of the top 20 biggest snowfall events have happened since 1980. So that's about 75 to 80% of our biggest snow events in the past 38 years of a 128-year record. Is that trend for these bigger snow events more recently showing up elsewhere?
It's definitely showing up in some places in the high latitudes. I can't tell you specifically what's going on in Minnesota. Every area is going to have slightly different factors that are influencing the particular size and intensity of storm systems. But what I can say is that in somewhere like Alaska, where our study was being conducted, is that the warming that has been happening across the world has led to these greater amounts of snowfall and more intense low pressure systems that sort of funnel storms into our field site. And that's, you know, definitely it's somewhat unique to the geography there, but I would expect it to be seen in other places too.
So I'm a meteorologist. Let's talk about the meteorology of this for a minute. Is this sort of a Goldilocks scenario for increased snow events with climate? If you get a wetter atmosphere and just enough, just the right amount of cold air to produce heavier snows, I mean, it can still be warmer than average, but it can still be below freezing. And if you add that extra moisture, is that the perfect combination?
Yeah, so you can imagine a situation where after it warms enough, then you'll start converting that snowfall into rainfall, and then you start to actually decrease the snowfall amounts. And so in warmer sites at lower elevation, closer to the coast and in other areas, they've actually seen the amount of snowfall has gone down. But where we are on Mount Hunter is so high that it's well below freezing pretty much all year long. So rainfall isn't really something that happens there yet. But if this warming continues that's happening at the site, then eventually we would start to move beyond where we are now and into a regime that could potentially get some rain up there.
Okay, so I know your study took place in the Arctic. Here in the mid-latitudes, there's some science that shows the jet stream may be slowing down, getting stuck a little more often, a little more sluggish. That certainly happened with this last storm in Minnesota. It stalled for a couple of days. Is that something that may be playing a factor in getting heavier snowfall amounts also?
So in Alaska, certainly the configuration of the pressure systems, such as the Aleutian low that I mentioned earlier, is affected and is related to the position of the jet stream. So this is all it is all related and goes into, exactly where storms are coming from and where they move towards and where they actually deposit their snow. And what's really nice about this site in Alaska is that because it sits up so high on a mountain, it's very sensitive to any incoming storms. So whenever the storm track is positioned there, it pretty much drops all of its snow as it hits this giant mountain barrier. So it's a really sensitive location to be able to, you know, pick up on some of these trends, which is why we decided to drill an ice core there in the first place.
Dominic, I'm sure people listening to this conversation get what we deal with every day. This is complicated stuff to talk about these relationships. You know, there are going to be people who listen and say, yeah, right, a warmer climate makes more snow. Sure. How do you best communicate this seemingly contradictory trend you're finding in your study?
It is a challenge. I guess the only thing I can say is that just because this area is so cold that it's not actually that contradictory. If you warm up an area that's well below freezing pretty much all year round, it's still going to be, you know, mostly below freezing. And then any precipitation that you get is still going to fall in terms of snow. So if we'd done this study at a lower elevation, we might be seeing a very different trend in terms of the amount of snowfall in particular. But what we really, you know, the take-home message here is really that it's more precipitation that is falling at our site on Mount Hunter, and that this is what is a pretty unique finding in terms of how, you know, global climate has affected, you know, an intensification of precipitation at our site here in Alaska.
Yeah, and we're seeing that trend show up elsewhere as well. Dominic Winsky with Dartmouth College, thanks so much for your perspective today.
Thank you.
My name is Christina Mittermeier, and I'm a contributing photographer for National Geographic, but I'm also the co-founder of Sea Legacy, a nonprofit organization dedicated to shining a light in our world's oceans using photography. So last year, my partner, photographer Paul Nicklin, and I came upon a starving polar bear in a remote fjord in Canada. We made a video and some photographs of this poor animal that was starving. And we didn't know why it was in such a poor condition. Afterwards, I thought it could have been a fight with another bear or with a walrus. But the bottom line is that the poor creature was close to death. And it was a very sad thing to see. A couple of months later, we posted this footage and this photograph on social media to talk about what climate change is going to look like for wildlife in the Arctic, and specifically for polar bears. As the sea ice melts in the Arctic, polar bears get trapped on land. People don't know that polar bears need a very large platform of sea ice from which to hunt. That's how they sneak up on seals. That's how they ambush their prey. And so as the sea ice melts, they really get in trouble. And so when we're seeing temperatures in the Arctic that on some days are as much as 25 degrees warmer than they should be, we know that in the next 30, 50 years, the fate of polar bears is very much in question. For a lot of people, climate change is just this ethereal thing that's happening to other people somewhere else. And we try to make images that bring back the emotion and the urgency into our everyday lives.
Mario Molina is an atmospheric chemist. He's the guy who won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for essentially discovering the ozone hole. Next week, Dr. Molina and two other Nobel laureates will speak in the Twin Cities. This week, I had a chance to ask Mario about his work and views on climate science.
Science tells us that if we continue without facing this challenge, that there is a very significant risk, 1 in 4, 1 in 5, of having tremendous difficulties with future generations. There would be places on our planet that would be uninhabitable. But we do have the technologies to face this problem, and that it's not a matter of facing difficulties with economic growth. We can take the opportunity, we can be creative and make sure that the economies continue to grow, and that particularly people with less resources throughout the planet, the poor people, they are the ones that are likely to suffer most if we don't do anything about climate change. And there are high hopes that poverty, as has been happening in recent years, will continue to decrease on a global scale. So that's the main message, that we can certainly do it and that it's very well established. There's really no doubt that there's a huge risk.
Mario, you won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for your research on atmospheric ozone. Your work prompted policy changes that essentially, I think it's fair to say, solved Earth's ozone problem. When we think about the issue of climate change from an atmospheric chemistry issue, can we solve that as a climate problem through chemistry?
Well, the first point, I'm optimistic, and since we do have at least that one example of a truly global environmental problem that was very successfully solved, all the countries in the planet agreed to phase out the compounds that we now know were indeed affecting the ozone layer. Now, climate change is considerably more difficult from a political perspective because the main cause, not the only one, but the main one is the use of fossil fuels, and that's very much part of the economy. So it is much harder to change, but I think it will happen. It's happening to some extent already, but again, it's a very big challenge for society.
We know how to use science and technology to solve the climate problem. You touched on this and the political aspects. Do you think that we will find the political will to solve climate change?
I think so. There are, of course, ups and downs, but perhaps the best indication that it can be done is with this international agreement connected with the United Nations and so on, but it's a Paris Accord. I was there at the end of 2015, and there were more than 150 heads of states. And at that time, they all agreed that they were going to work together to solve this problem. So, yes, it can be done, although we have difficulties, of course, now mainly with the U.S. administration, with the presidency in the United States. But we think that's a temporary slowdown of the solution, and that given the fact that society in general, certainly the scientific community, the community of experts, all the academies of sciences, as well as many industries and many cities and some states like California and Massachusetts and so on, all indicating their willingness to solve the problem, I believe it can indeed be done and that it will be done.
We talk often about climate change as a problem, but is there an opportunity there as well?
Yes. First of all, we are already seeing some very large impacts of climate change. But there is an opportunity because technology has advanced to such an extent that renewable energies are now competitive in terms of costs with fossil fuel energy. And so there is an opportunity for economies to grow, to have many jobs created by these new technologies, and to basically worry about the environment, climate change being the main worry, but there are others as well, in such a way that we preserve our environment and make sure that society can keep profiting from all the findings of science and technology and having a very high standard of living. If we take these things into account, if for some reason they were to be ignored, there is a significant risk that we would face enormous difficulties, such as huge migrations and many difficulties trying to feed the entire population of the planet and so on. So it's a matter of risk because the climate is a complex system, so we cannot predict with certainty what will happen in the next few decades.
Mario Molina, winner of the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, thank you for your excellent work and for your insight today.
Very glad to be on your program.
Finally, some positive energy news. The American Wind Energy Association reports wind now produces more than 30% of all power in Iowa, Kansas, Oklahoma, and South Dakota. Minnesota and 13 other states now generate more than 10% of their electricity from wind. 105,000 Americans now work in wind jobs, and ranchers and farmers earned about $267 million in wind lease revenues last year. Climate change solutions blown in the wind. That's ClimateCast this week. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner.